Now we're going to talk about some bears.
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 Bears. Beats.
Beats.
Battlestar Galactica. Battlestar Galactica.
You know what that sound means. It's time for the Michigan DNR's Wild Talk Podcast. Welcome to the Wild Talk Podcast, where representatives from the DNR's Wildlife Division chew the fat and shoot the scat about all things habitat, feathers, and fur. With insights, interviews, and your questions answered on the air, you'll get a better picture of what's happening in the world of wildlife here in the great state of Michigan.
Hello, and welcome to Wild Talk. I'm Holly Vaughn, and hosting with me today are Rachel Leitner and Hannah Schauer. Hello, girls.
Hello. Hi, Holly.
It's been a while since we've been able to chat with you due to the current COVID-19 situation. We were unable to record back in April since we couldn't be together at our studio, but we've since been able to come up with a strategy to record together while apart. So we're happy to be here with you today and hope you are all staying safe and healthy.
Yes, and we hope that you enjoy this episode because we're switching things up a bit and are excited to share some new content with you. We're going to begin this episode with a new wildlife spotlight to highlight one of the amazing critters we have here in Michigan.
And don't worry, we'll still answer your questions from the mailbag and have a great interview for you each episode. We will also still take time to highlight all kinds of projects and wildlife conservation work going on throughout the state during our Working for Wildlife segment, formerly known as Around the State.
Later in this episode, we'll be talking with DNR's Public Information Officer, Ed Golder, on the DNR's response to COVID-19. We'll also give you the latest updates on that. But first, we're excited to tell you a little bit about the wood frog.
Now is a great time to listen for the different frogs as they sing for a mate. Spring peepers, chorus frogs, northern leopard frogs, and wood frogs are some common species you can hear singing right now throughout most of the state. Today, we're going to put our wildlife spotlight on the wood frog.
Yes, one of my favorite frogs that are singing in the springtime. Wood frogs have spent the winter hibernating, and with the warmer weather, they are now out and about. And one of my favorite things about the wood frog is they use glucose as a sort of antifreeze and can partially freeze solid and still survive.
Wow, they're so incredible.
I know. It just boggles my mind.
Their name gives away their preferred type of habitat, woodlands. They can be found in wet, shady woodlands of just about any type throughout the state. Chances are good you may have heard a wood frog's chuckling sounds or even seen a wood frog this spring if you have woodlands near your home. Wood frogs are usually light brown with darker brown spots right behind their eyes that help them blend in with the leaf litter on the forest floor. They're only about 2 to 3 inches long and they can be really tricky to spot.
Yes, indeed. This spring, I have really enjoyed the male wood frogs singing in the little seasonal wetlands in my wooded backyard. It's a very small spot, but it's ideal for the frogs because there are no fish for them to worry about. Here, we'll play a little clip of what their call sounds like.
It always sounds to me like wood frogs are laughing. I love their cute little chuckle.
I do too, yes. It's a fun little sound.
The wood frog has one of the shortest breeding seasons, beginning in March and slowing down around mid-April, depending on the weather and where you are in the state. During the breeding season, female wood frogs lay anywhere from 800 to 3,000 eggs. That's a lot of eggs.
Yes.
Depending on the water temperature, the eggs will hatch in 1 to 3 weeks. Tadpoles take from 45 to 85 days to transform into froglets. And if the frogs are using seasonal wetlands and the wetlands dry out before the tadpoles can transform, they will perish.
Yeah. And as I mentioned with the seasonal wetlands, they are advantageous because of the limited predators, such as lack of fish. But they do run the risk of drying out midsummer if we don't get much rain. So not always an ideal situation necessarily. Very weather dependent. But after a breeding season is done, the adults will usually leave the water and spend the rest of their time on the forest floor under leaf litter looking for small insects and spiders to eat.
Delicious.
If you're curious about other frog calls you might be hearing right now, you can check out the different frog calls and get information about each of our Michigan frogs and toads at michigan.gov/wildlife. Stick around. Next up is our Working for Wildlife segment.
Pure Michigan hunt applications are on sale now. If you want your shot of what is considered Michigan's ultimate hunt, pick up a $5 application or two. There's no limit to the number you can buy. If you're one of the three lucky winners, you'll get a hunting prize package worth thousands, as well as licenses for elk, bear, spring and fall turkey, antlerless deer, and first pick at a managed waterfowl area for a reserved hunt. Purchase anywhere hunting licenses are sold or online at michigan.gov/PMH.
So during our Working for Wildlife segment, we'll be talking about wildlife recreational opportunities that are still available to you and the precautions you can take to keep yourself and your family safe. We know it has been a stressful time for everyone. The good news is you can still get outdoors for some fresh air and recreational pursuits, especially now that the weather is warming up.
Spring is a great time to get out and do some wildlife watching around your yard or your neighborhood. And you can participate in my favorite pastime, which is bird watching. Many of Michigan's breeding birds are beginning to set up their territories, and some are even nesting, and some even have youngsters already. May also begins the big push of spring migrants that are coming up to Michigan from Central and South America. Soon you'll see scarlet tanagers, indigo buntings, Baltimore orioles, and many varieties of warblers decorating the treetops. Birdwatching is a great hobby that is ready-made for social distancing, and it can be done anywhere. All you need is a pair of binoculars, a good field guide, and maybe a notebook and pencil to jot down what you see. It's a great opportunity to record all the different species that you might see or hear. And you can even check out, while you're away from people and you have some spare time, you can even check out some birding apps on your phone, which not only have information about where birds can be found and what they look like, but many also have recordings of what the birds sound like as well. Online, you can check out allaboutbirds.org to do some research before you head out into your neighborhood or your local park.
Yes, and as we mentioned before, there are a lot of frogs out singing right now, too. So a lot of wildlife watching opportunities, and even in your own backyard, there are a plethora of birds to keep your eyes out for. You know, the other week, I saw a pileated woodpecker right outside my window that landed on the tree for a second before flying off. So it's a good opportunity to see all the birds that or other critters that come by your yard that you probably don't normally see when you're at work.
Absolutely. And they're so entertaining to watch, too.
Yes. And while you're watching those birds or listening for frogs, be sure to look down and check out the ground. There are spring wildflowers blooming right now, probably throughout your yard, and you may start to notice the buzz of butterflies, bees, and other insects while you're checking them out. While exploring what sort of small life forms exist in your yard, consider becoming a citizen scientist and reporting your findings to the Michigan Butterfly Network. This butterfly conservation program by the Kalamazoo Nature Center will be offering free virtual trainings this month for anybody who wants to learn more on how to identify your local butterflies. You can also help monitor their flying routes.
And spring turkey hunting is going on right now through the end of this month. So if you haven't yet purchased a spring turkey license this year, you can still get out and do some turkey hunting with a Hunt 234 license. The Hunt 234 is valid May 1st through May 31st and is a statewide hunting license for both public and private lands, except for public lands in Unit ZZ, which is the southern lower peninsula of Michigan. You can purchase your license throughout the spring turkey season, and you can get those online. And of course, the bag limit for the spring turkey season is one bird.
Of course, wherever you are recreating, please remember to adhere to social distancing guidelines and stay a minimum of 6 feet away from people who are outside of your household. And remember, traveling long distances is strongly discouraged, so be sure to do your wildlife watching or hunting close to home.
That is Working for Wildlife. Next, we'll be chatting with Ed Golder.
Now is the time to apply. Applications for your chance to hunt a Michigan elk this fall are on sale from May 1st through June 1st. Applications are just $5. Visit michigan.gov/elk for more information.
Welcome back to Wild Talk. Today we have Ed Golder, the DNR's public information officer, on the phone with us to let us know the latest on what the DNR is doing during the COVID-19 situation.
Well, thanks, you guys. I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller, and I'm really excited to be here. I really appreciate the podcast and everything you guys do to keep people informed about all natural resources in the state. So I really appreciate the opportunity.
Well, thanks for joining us. And, you know, along with others within state government and in other businesses across the state, the DNR has been busy with efforts to try and keep Michiganders safe and healthy during this COVID-19 pandemic. We know there have been a lot of changes and a lot of things for folks to keep track of while enjoying Michigan's natural resources. So we're really glad to have you here today to talk to us about some of those changes and the important things that we all need to keep in mind while we're recreating in Michigan in this new era. So why do you think recreation is so important to the people of Michigan? And do you think it's especially important now?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think anybody who's lived in Michigan for any period of time, or anyone who's visited Michigan, knows how special the natural resources are to our state. I think the Great Lakes rival natural features across the world for sheer size and beauty. That's not to mention, you know, our inland lakes, the forests, land that is spread throughout the state, both public and private, abundant fish and wildlife. So everybody's pulse kind of beats to that in Michigan. And I think outdoor recreation is fundamental to physical and mental health. And it's even more important right now in the midst of a pandemic. I think it's interesting that in every successive iteration of the governor's stay home, stay safe executive orders that she's issued, that exemption for outdoor recreation has been the first one on the list. I'm sure it's the same for everybody. It is for me. It probably is for you guys. But that ability to get out to hunt and fish, to walk a trail, to go for a run, go for a walk, to visit a local park, that's part really of what will help maintain and sustain us during this difficult time, provided we continue to follow the important guidance of public health professionals. So I think outdoor recreation is incredibly important to all of us. It's especially important now.
Absolutely. We completely agree.
I'm sure you do.
As big fans of recreation ourselves, you know, it's kind of what's keeping most of us sane right now.
That's absolutely true.
Being able to go outside and enjoy our natural resources. So, as you mentioned in the governor's executive orders, there are guidelines sort of put in place for people that are going out to recreate. So, can people still go out for a walk or a hike on nearby public lands? And if they are planning to go recreate, what types of precautions should they take to keep themselves and others safe?
Sure. They absolutely can continue to go out and take a walk or a hike. Michigan State Parks remain open for day use, as do almost all our state trails, our game areas, our boat launches. Our state-managed public lands, federally managed public lands, hunting and fishing are still allowable activities. We have hopes that those things that are allowed will continue to expand if the governor is able to lift some of the restrictions that are currently in place based on the data she and health professionals are seeing. And as to the question of, you know, what should you do if you're planning to go out and recreate? You know, one of the most important things I think right now is to stay local, you know, so that you're not risking transporting the virus any great distance, so that you're not putting, you know, other populations at risk. And the other thing I'd say is follow the advice of health professionals. So at a minimum, that means maintaining that social distance of 6 feet from people outside your own household. It means not going out if you're feeling sick. It means washing your hands frequently and thoroughly and using hand sanitizer where water and soap aren't available. And it means following the directions posted at places you're visiting. So if playgrounds and picnic areas are closed, please don't use playgrounds as picnic areas. I mean, we close playgrounds at state parks for that very reason. We didn't want to see those shared surfaces be a vector for disease. And just please be aware and conscious of other people. You know, public health professionals have told us that the coronavirus can be spread by people who don't show any symptoms. So you don't know if the person coming down the trail toward you or fishing next to you is somebody who has a pre-existing condition, somebody who's been treated for cancer or is immunocompromised for whatever reason. And that could make them much more susceptible to the bad effects of this virus. So just please remember that this really is about all of us together, as people keep saying, and not just each of us individually.
The virus has impacted operations for many essential and non-essential businesses. How exactly have DNR operations been impacted by COVID-19?
Yeah, like every part of society, the DNR has had to change the way we operate in response to this pandemic. Our first priority is to protect public health and safety. And so our staff who are able to do so are working from home, just like you guys are, just like I am, to protect their health and the health of the public. Where we have staff that are continuing to work in the field, such as our conservation officers, our park staff, and others, we are taking precautions to make sure they're safe as we can make them. And like other areas of government, we'll face funding challenges, sometimes significant ones this year and likely next. So you've already seen temporary layoffs of some people within state government and within the DNR. We've frozen some funding or suspended some projects for some things that we typically would do, to wait to see what the rapidly slowed economic activity in society will be for us. We'll continue to make those changes as we need to and adjust as we need to. Our boss, Dan Eichinger, our director, likes to remind us that, you know, the modern conservation movement really took a turn and started to ramp up in the 1930s in the depth of the Great Depression. So it's a great reminder that these things that are so precious to all of us, that we love so much, we're going to continue to take care of those things. We may change some of what we do for a little while because of these extraordinary circumstances. But, you know, our commitment to and passion for that work is not going to change, and neither will the commitment of our citizens.
So over the last few weeks, we have seen closures of DNR facilities and then additional closures due to folks not following social distancing guidelines. So as the weather warms up and more people begin to head outdoors, what are some things that people should remember or consider before going out?
Yeah, you know, we've very early on in this whole thing, we closed some of our high traffic facilities, such as the Outdoor Adventure Center in Detroit, the Michigan History Center, simply because we knew that social distancing couldn't be maintained at those places. And we've closed other places, such as Tippy Dam Recreation Area in Manistee County, very popular fishing spot in the spring, because people weren't abiding by social distancing requirements there. We're going to continue to monitor everything that we manage in order to make sure that that top priority of protecting public health and safety is maintained. As you point out, as the weather is going to get warmer, thank goodness, and we're going to see an increased demand for those recreational facilities. So I want, you know, we're asking for people to continue to follow all those important social distancing requirements and whatever other requirements, you know, that they see at those particular facilities. If you get to a parking lot and it's just too full and you realize you're not going to be able to maintain social distancing at that place, then please find another place to recreate. You know, continuing to be mindful of what public health professionals are telling us in the midst of all this is going to be really important to making sure that our recreational facilities remain open and that you and other people around you stay safe.
Over the last few weeks, a really common discussion and topic has been boating. How has the latest executive order that was just released impacted recreational boating?
So for a time there, you may recall, motorized boating was prohibited under one of the versions of the executive order that was issued by the governor, EO 2020-59, which was issued on April 24th, allows for people to use motorized boats and to fish from motorized boats. The order requires that when people are doing that, they're maintaining social distance at least 6 feet apart from people outside their own households. They're strongly encouraging people not to share equipment to prevent the spreading of the virus through those shared surfaces. So provided people are following those requirements, they're allowed and encouraged to boat and use motorized boats for the duration of that executive order.
I'm sure lots of people will be happy to hear that.
They certainly are. That was, you know, it came just immediately prior to the opening of trout season and some other openers. So couldn't have been better timed. So we're very grateful the governor was able to do that based on what she was hearing from health professionals.
So can we just clarify with you? So you could go fishing with a fishing buddy, considering you're, 6 feet apart from someone that lives outside your household.
That is correct. You can correct. Do that under this current iteration of the EO. There's no prohibition on your boating with people outside your household, provided you're maintaining those social distancing requirements.
Well, this has been very informational, and we really appreciate all these details that you've been able to share with us on what the DNR has been doing during these very unusual times. If people have additional questions regarding boating, hunting, or other recreation during this pandemic, where can they go to learn more about our response?
Yeah, thanks. I think that's a really important question, because this situation is changing day to day, as you guys know, which is why each of the governor's executive orders has an end date to it, so that public health professionals can reevaluate where we are as a state in relation to the pandemic. So we're changing information on our website to adjust to those changing orders on an almost daily basis. So keep checking back at michigan.gov/DNR for the latest. You can find there a link to our coronavirus information and an opportunity to subscribe to our emails that'll help keep you updated. In addition, if you want broader information about the COVID-19 response in Michigan, go to michigan.gov/coronavirus, and you can see kind of what's going on statewide.
Well, thank you so much, Ed. We really appreciate your time today and sharing all this information with us. So stick around. Next up, we will be answering your questions from the mailbag.
Did you know that you can take your hunting and fishing regulations with you wherever you go? Have access to the information you need, when you need it, right on your smartphone. Just visit michigan.gov/DNR digest to download the applicable hunting digest before you head out to the woods, or the Michigan fishing guide before you hit the water. Download the most up-to-date regulations available today at michigan.gov/DNR digests.
Welcome back. Now it's time for us to answer your questions from our mailbag.
One, two, three.
Christina wrote in about a duck's nest by her house, and she's wondering how long the mother will sit on the nest before the eggs hatch. So this is very common. Duck nests, particularly mallard nests, seem to be found just about everywhere in the spring. Not only right close to the water, they'll build nests in landscaping, in gardens, or other locations near people. So if you spot one, it's best to just leave the nest alone and keep pets away from it too. Now, mallards lay their eggs in a sequence. They lay an egg at a time for about 10 to 14 days. They don't lay all their eggs at once. They lay them sequentially so that all the eggs will hatch at the same time, and so she can lead all her babies to water on the same day. If the duck hasn't finished laying all her eggs, you might see a new egg show up in the nest every day, but you might not actually see the hen stop by to lay that egg. Once she has laid all of her eggs, she'll then sit and incubate them, and she'll end up sitting on her nest for about a month before the eggs hatch. And then she'll lead her babies to water, and they'll go on and live their happy duck lives. So you may also find Canada geese nesting near your house or in local parks. Adult geese are extremely protective. They may hiss and run or fly toward perceived intruders. They are very protective of their nests and their young. So try to avoid nesting areas. But if that's not possible, you might want to carry an umbrella. Open and close it as you approach the geese to gently scare the birds away. So everyone can play a part in successfully sharing space with wildlife in their communities. You can get additional tips and information on handling conflicts with wildlife and what to do if you find a baby animal at michigan.gov/wildlife.
Excellent. It's good to know. I've got a couple ducks that nest around here, and so We've just been wondering where the nest is hidden, and we haven't come across it at all yet. But I know we get lots of calls every year about ducks nesting in some weird places. We've even had them nesting in near our building in downtown Lansing, which is all concrete. So,
oh, yeah. It's always an adventure. We get ducks and geese nesting in medians, ducks and geese nesting in flower pots in the middle of cities. It's they'll use just about any spot they can find.
Absolutely. So speaking of nests, Susie wrote in wondering about a nest of newborn bunnies that she found in her mulch. So finding a rabbit's nest near people in backyards or landscaping is not unusual, same as it is with ducks. You can find rabbit's nests in a variety of places. And it's also not unusual for that nest to appear unattended. So many wild mothers, including cottontail rabbits and our white-tailed deer, will leave their babies unattended and hidden as a way to protect them from predators. The mother is almost always nearby and will return periodically to care for her young when she feels it is safe. You might not see her. She'll be fairly stealthy because she wants to go unnoticed. Fawns will soon be making an appearance, and does will often hide those fawns near human development as there is probably less predator activity in that particular area, so they view it as a safe spot. And while these fawns may appear abandoned because they are alone, they rarely are. Their instinct to lay still and their excellent camouflage helps them stay hidden from predators. The best thing that you can do to help young wildlife is to simply leave them alone. A wild animal's best chance for survival is to be left in the wild where its mother can care for it and teach it how to survive. On the rare occasion that you come across an animal that is injured or truly abandoned, please keep in mind that in Michigan, it is illegal to keep the animal unless you are a licensed wildlife rehabilitator. Under the current Stay Home, Stay Safe executive order, some wildlife rehabilitators may have had to suspend their services. Please call ahead to see whether they are able to assist at this time. As we mentioned with the previous question, you can find out more about what to do when you find a baby animal by visiting michigan.gov/wildlife.
Thanks, Hannah. The last question I had was from Patrick, and he wrote in asking, what happens to tree stands that are left on public land? Does the DNR remove the stands, and how do we report stands left in the woods? Tree stands on public lands are supposed to be portable and have your name and contact information affixed to them. If the tree stands are found on public land after March 1st or put up before September 1st, our conservation officers will make every attempt to contact the owner. Our officers conduct regular follow-ups to see if the tree stands have been removed after contacting the owner. However, due to safety concerns, our staff do not remove tree stands. If the stands are left on public lands after March 1st, they are considered abandoned property, and anyone could go and choose to remove a tree stand they find on public land after the removal date has passed. Please keep in mind that you cannot use an illegal tree stand regardless of who placed it on public land. And additionally, your name on a tree stand does not guarantee you'll have exclusive use of that stand. If you find a tree stand on public land after March 1st or before September 1st, please contact our Report All Poaching hotline at 1-800-292-7800 or visit michigan.gov/rap for an online reporting form.
Yes, that's a good question that we get quite frequently, especially around that March time frame. Lots of people who notice tree stands are still up. And so definitely, if you have a tree stand out on public land, be sure to take it down by March 1st.
As we zip this segment to a close, remember, if you have questions about wildlife or hunting, or if you'd like to suggest a topic for our podcast to discuss, you can call 517-284-WILD. Or email dnr-wildlife@michigan.gov. Your question could be featured on the mailbag.
Now is the time to apply. Applications for your chance to hunt a Michigan black bear this fall are on sale from May 1st through June 1st. Applications are only $5. Visit michigan.gov/bear for more information.
Wildlife can be found everywhere in Michigan, from the most rural areas all the way to the urban centers. Today, we're going to talk a little bit more about Michigan's only resident bear species, the black bear. Black bears are primarily found in the Upper Peninsula and the northern half of the Lower Peninsula.
Throughout the winter, while they hibernate, bears rely on their fat reserves to keep them nourished. Now bears are on the move after rising from their dens, and they are hungry.
Yes, they are hungry and searching for food right now. In order to help your communities avoid potential conflicts with bears, you may want to consider taking down bird feeders and removing any potential food sources that might attract wildlife.
Despite the abundance of natural food sources available in the springtime, bears prefer bird feeds and suet because of their high fat content and easy accessibility. When bears discover a bird feeder filled with a calorie-rich meal, they won't soon forget, and they could become repeat visitors. Once they've found a reliable food source, they'll return until that food source is removed.
Bears that rely on human food sources can regularly encounter people too, often causing them to lose their natural fear of humans. A habituated bear is not easily scared out of an area and will continue to visit the area looking for a meal. This could result in a bear causing property damage and/or having to be relocated or even euthanized.
There are a variety of food sources that can attract bears to your yard, including bird feeders, trash cans, grills, pet foods, apiaries, which are where beehives are kept, bonfire pits, and anything else that might contain food debris. Homeowners should take action to limit bear conflicts by taking down bird feeders, storing grills and trash cans in sealed buildings, and cleaning all substances of food debris.
If you've taken precautions, such as removing food sources, and are still experiencing bear problems 2 to 3 weeks later, please contact the nearest DNR office and speak with the local staff for assistance.
Additional tips and information on how to handle conflicts with wildlife are available at michigan.gov/wildlife. Thanks so much for joining us on this episode of Wild Talk. Stay safe, and we'll see you in June.
This has been the Wild Talk Podcast, your monthly podcast airing the first of each month and offering insights into the world of wildlife across the state of Michigan. You can reach the Wildlife Division at 517-284-9453 or dnr-wildlife@michigan.gov.